And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, starting an hour earlier because of the media schedule today. OTAs will continue. They will, in all likelihood, be indoors in the field house because it is extremely rainy today.
Yeah, you think?
It's going out on a limb there.
It is nasty out there. We will be out in the field house, no doubt about it. So we will literally wrap up the live portion of our program at about 11:45. Then we're going to hear from Tony Elliott. We recorded the interview a couple days ago, the running backs coach from Clemson, and he'll carry you the rest of the way as we scurry out to practice so we can properly report on what happened at the first open media OTA session today.
Indeed, and we'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We're also going to take a look at the rankings that were unveiled by Peter King from Monday Morning Quarterback SI.com. Some interesting tidbits that he threw out there. So we'll get into that as we move along, as well as what has occurred in OTAs throughout the course of this week. I know you wrote reports over the last few days, and one of the things that was interesting that you had mentioned, John, was the fact that the tight end position and the linebacker position seems to have more rotation than any other position.
Yeah,
at least right now.
And I think the tight end position, in my opinion, has rotated probably a little bit more than the linebacker position. I've seen different combinations of all sorts of guys at tight end. You know, Ingram with Ellison, Ty with Cooper Thompson. Ty with Adams with Ingram, Ellison with Ty. I mean, these guys are all over the place, and they're with different groups. They're with, you know, the first, second, third string. Guys are all over the place. So they really want to kind of get a feel, I think, for not only how they're going to stack their depth chart, but what players work best together in certain formations and alignments and what you're trying to accomplish, passing game, running game. So I think this is really kind of almost an information gathering exercise for the coaches to see where these guys are going to fit and who works together best based on what you're trying to do.
Well, and this is the time of the year that you should do something like that, especially before you get to training camp with the guys not necessarily put their pads on at this point and there's no contact. You want to at least be able to experiment positioning. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, with respect to the rankings that Peter King throughout this week, he has the Giants at number 10.
And by the way, I want to warn the fans. If you want to go to Monday Morning Quarterback and read this, you better put away like 45 minutes.
Going to take about,
because this is a two-part story, and you know how long the Monday Morning Quarterback stories usually are. It takes a good 15 minutes to get through it.
Yeah.
These are two stories of equal length that are basically Monday Morning Quarterback size. So you better have a good half hour, 45 minutes if you want to get through this whole thing. And it's really good if you want to prepare your mind for the NFL season.
And there's other nuggets in addition to the rankings that he put in the story as well.
Absolutely.
So that's more of a reason why, as you mentioned, you want to put some time aside. So to us, obviously, the biggest interest is where the NFC East teams are ranked, according to Peter King. And
of course,
he has the Eagles at 23. He has the Redskins at 22. He has the Giants at 10, and he has the Cowboys at 7, just to give you an idea of what he looks upon the NFC East. And the reason why he has the Giants at 10 is he's optimistic about what Brandon Marshall is going to bring to the table. He's optimistic about what Evan Ingram is going to do for the offense. His main concern, though, is still about the offensive line.
Shocking.
Yes.
It's almost like we've been saying that for the past month.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I mean, he loves the defense, obviously. He comes back mostly intact. I think he would like to see a little bit better of a pass rush, a more consistent pass rush from the group. But, yeah, his worry is about whether or not Eli Manning will have time to sit back there and find these weapons that have been added to the receiving core. Can they open up holes in the running game to further balance the offense? These are all questions that remain to be seen, and I think Peter King hits it right on the head there. And, you know, obviously things will happen that you can't predict in the NFL, and I'm sure something that we think is going to be good is going to be bad, and something we think is going to be bad is going to be good, because that's how the NFL season works every year. But I think his analysis is pretty much right on, and he, much like we've talked about, thinks DJ Fluker will have a chance to earn his way into the starting lineup. We'll see if he can.
And he also likes the selection of Dalvin Tomlinson because he thinks that he could step in day one and fill the void left behind by Jonathan Hankins. As far as why he has the Cowboys 7, he's not a big fan of the narrative that Dak Prescott's going to have a sophomore slump. He's not buying into that narrative. So that's why he's not as down on the Cowboys as maybe some other people are.
And I agree. I don't know why you would think he would. You know, people go back and say, well, look, Robert Griffin III did. It happens. To me, Dak Prescott's rookie season and Robert Griffin III's rookie season, to me, Lance, are very different. I know Dak Prescott has the reputation for being a running quarterback. He's not.
Yeah.
He's an athletic quarterback that can run. He did a ton of his damage from the pocket last year. He was a traditional quarterback, and they used him that way. He didn't rely on his athleticism to win games and be successful. He relied on his arm, and he threw the ball pretty well. The interesting thing for the Cowboys to me is, look, Zeke Elliott's back. He's good. You know Jason Witten's a good player. I think the receiving core, it's not spectacular, but I think it's very good, and it's consistent with the guys they throw out there with Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams. I think offensively, the only question you have is how is that offensive line going to adjust losing two starters from last year? And I think it would have been easy for them to survive, or easier to just survive the loss of Ronald Leary and you slide in Lael Collins, because that's what they had the first four or five games last year anyway before Collins got hurt. Now with Doug Free's retirement, in addition to that, you have Collins now out at right tackle, so he's moving to a different spot. We'll see if he stays there. And really, they don't know who their starting left guard is going to be. Is it going to be Joe Looney, Jonathan Cooper, Emmett Cleary, a former Giant.
Yeah.
Who didn't make the team last year. He's been working at guard, a position he really hasn't played before. He's traditionally a tackle. So I think how that Cowboy offensive line adjusts to two-fifths of its group not returning as starters, I think offensively, that's your only question. Of course, defensively, they got a lot of young guys in the secondary. What can Jalen Smith do coming off the knee and the nerve issue? Those are the questions on defense. But I think the Cowboys and Giants right now, if you made me like place odds on it for winning the division, I'd say even money, maybe even give the Giants an inch of an edge because their schedule is slightly easier because of where you're playing the teams in the NFC South and the NFC North. And I think they're more balanced offensively and defensively. But I think those teams are in the right spots. I thought he had the Redskins and Eagles too far down.
I think both those teams are better. I wholeheartedly agree with that. His questions about the Redskins is not so much personnel. He's concerned about the loss of Sean McVay, the offensive coordinator who's now the Rams head coach. And then as far as the Eagles are concerned...
And by the way, Jay Gruden will call plays for them this year.
Exactly.
And be the offensive coordinator.
And has plenty of experience doing that when he was with the Bengals, and he was their offensive coordinator. So I don't know how much of a dramatic loss that necessarily is. And then his concern about the Eagles, which I would agree with, is... there's a lot of pressure on the front seven because of the question marks and issues on the secondary level, which I get. But his other questions about the Eagles is just maybe how the new veterans are going to mesh well with Carson Wentz. But, I mean, he's got more proven commodities, I would argue, Carson Wentz at the receiving core than he was working with at times last season, now that they brought in, you know, guys like Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith to go along with Jordan Matthews, and they still have Zach Ertz in the mix. So, I mean, he's certainly not lacking weapons entering his sophomore season.
Yeah, to me, I think the issues for these two teams are very different. Like you just said, to me, the only question I have about the Eagles offensively is the quarterback and a consistent running game, because they don't really have that, you know, number one back, unless you want to count LeGarrette Blount as
that guy.
Well,
he's probably going to have his first opportunity to do that.
I think he's fine. I think he benefits a lot from teams, you know, playing nickel and dime against Tom Brady all the time, and you're not stuffing the box against the run. It's going to be a lot different for him. Look at it this way. You're getting a lot of different looks with Carson Wentz as your quarterback as compared to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You are. You just are. Period. Done. So, I think the running game for the Eagles, how much Carson Wentz improves in his second year. And I think the big issue with that, too, is that you look at his last, I think, 8 or 9 games last year, his numbers were not good. He had more interceptions than touchdowns, and he really didn't play that well. So that's there. And then, of course, on defense, I think their secondary is a legitimate question. They drafted Sidney Jones, but I wouldn't expect to get anything out of him this year because of the torn Achilles. They have good safeties, but I think their corners are a legitimate question. I thought his reasoning for the Redskins was odd. You know, it was almost like he's assuming that chaos of some kind is going to envelop the organization. Now, it's the Redskins, so there is a chance that's going to happen. It's kind of what they do down there. You know, the whole thing with their general manager this offseason, moving on from him with the alcoholism, or at least
Scott McLuhan,
the accusations of the alcoholism and all that sort of thing, the Kirk Cousins contract situation. And look, he did lose receivers. He lost to Sean Jackson. He lost Pierre Garçon. I get it. But you bring in Terrell Pryor. You still have Jay Crowder there. You have Josh Doctson, who came in last year in the draft, who I think could be pretty good in the second
year. And he's
year.
Looked good so far in OTAs,
no
according to the reports.
And I think P. Ryan's probably better than any of the running backs they had on the roster last year. And I think their defense is okay. I mean, to me, I think if I was doing the rankings, I would have had both the Eagles and Redskins somewhere between like 17 and 19 rather than 20.
I think that's
23.
Fair. Yeah, I think that you could certainly boost them up because, you know, also the fact that he didn't write about, from what I recall, you know, the parity in the division over the last few years. And even when you have a down year, you know, there hasn't been a team that's really pulled away from the rest of the pack. So for that fact alone, I wouldn't write off, you know, those two other teams who are maybe a tad behind the Giants and the Cowboys, because these divisions, the way they play out across the NFL, not just the NFC East, they tend to beat each other up, especially this division, more so than anyone else.
And the division, Lance, is going to be decided very simply by this. How are you going to play against the other teams in your division? If you go 2-4 in the division, your goose is cooked. If you go 3-3, you have a shot. If you go 4-2 or 5-1, you're in great shape.
Yeah.
And that's really going to be the deciding factor. I hate to simplify it that much, but really, with the way these teams are so close, that's what it's going to come down to.
Now, for the Giants, they're home division games are not until all the way at the end of the season, which means taking care of business on the road, which has been an issue at times, that's got to be a big priority early on this year.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's the opposite for Dallas. Dallas has a really tough final four or five games, so they're going to have to, you can bring their schedule up, they're going to have to build up a bit of a cushion to me because of their final games on the schedule. And you look at their final five games, they close at Philly. Before that, they're versus Seattle, at Oakland, at Giants, versus Washington, okay? So they got two out of the three division teams on the road against Oakland, home versus Seattle. Those are five really tough games, and that's including – no, that is not the thing. That is their five games after their Thursday yeah. game on Thanksgiving. So they have to build up a cushion, I think, if for those final five games if they want to win the division. They're going to have to only have, you know, two, maybe three losses at that point to be in really good position to win the division. The Giants, on the other hand, while their December schedule certainly is not easy, it's very challenging. As you mentioned, they play at least their three division games at home, and they have Arizona, who I don't think is going to be a playoff team this year in the mix there, and they have Oakland in the mix there as well on the road. So, to me, the Giants' toughest games out of the division, including on the road in the division, are weeks 1 through 11, and then after that, it becomes a little bit more workable. So, I think the challenge for the Giants is not getting too far behind in those first 10 or 11 games based on how the schedule plays out.
Well, and the other thing is the Giants, those West Coast trips are spread out, which could be good or bad depending on how you look at it. And I'm looking at the Cowboys' schedule because I didn't really take a glance at where their West Coast trips
They're
are.
They're also in the middle of the country, so the trip
Correct.
For them isn't as bad.
No, it's a very
either.
Good point.
Right.
I mean, they get rid of Denver and Arizona right at the beginning of the season, and they have that in back-to-back weeks. And there's the Monday night game following the Sunday night game, so you have a little bit more time to recover. San Francisco is in the middle of the season, week 7. That's also coming off a bye. And then they go to Oakland December 17th. So their West Coast trips are spread out, but I feel like they're bunched at the beginning and the end, and you have some wiggle room in the middle compared to at least what the Giants are dealing with.
That's a tough Sunday night game on the 17th. Not because – and that's two road games in a row, by the way. They're at New York the week before, then Sunday night at Oakland. This is for Dallas. Then the following week, on just 6 days rest, but it's really only like, you know, 5.5 based on the fact that it's a Sunday night game at Oakland, they have to host Seattle. So that is a really tough turnaround for them late in the year after getting the benefit of that Thanksgiving Day game, which kind of gives you almost like a little half a bye week late in the year.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to some calls, we'll get to some tweets along the way here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, starting an hour earlier because of the media schedule today for OTAs. The Giants have just announced a transaction, so we want to at least go over that. They have brought in two players, and in order to bring in two players, they have to create space. So they have terminated the contract of veteran safety Raheem Moore, and they've also waived linebacker Ishaq Williams, who was on the practice squad and then was bumped up to the 53-man roster last season. So that is to make room for former Lions defensive end Devin Taylor and then the veteran safety Duke Iheanacho, who's been with the Redskins the last three seasons. So that's somebody that has some familiarity with the division. It's interesting because they terminate the contract of Raheem Moore, and I remember I talked about this earlier in the week, John. He's a veteran safety in his own right, which provided something a little bit different than some of the young guys or the guys coming back from injury. So they're basically swapping one veteran safety out for another.
I guess they like Iheanacho better. It must be that simple. And I think the interesting thing about the defensive end, Devin Taylor, he's actually had pretty good production. Last year, in 17 games for the Lions, started all 17 games, including the NFC wildcard game against the Seattle Seahawks, he had 4.5 sacks. And, you know, he in 61 regular season games and 18 starts, he has 15 sacks. So, you know, that is some pretty decent production. Obviously, at 6'7", he's got very good length. He's a taller player. So and Iheanacho has good experience in the division being with the Redskins. So I think these are two good pickups, and I think both these guys will add good competition at their respective positions, especially given, you know, the relative inexperience behind your top two guys at defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, when you take into consideration, I mean, even Romeo Okwara, who flashed late last season, you know, Avery Moss is a rookie, Owo Digizua has had to deal with some injuries. Yeah, I mean, even though they're familiar names, these guys haven't really been on the field much. So I think this is a sign, and this is what we've talked about earlier in the offseason, John. The sign is that the main theme this offseason was to bolster the depth chart. A lot of focus on making sure that you have some veterans, you have experience, that in the event somebody goes down, there's somebody that has reliability working in their favor that can at least come in. And you mentioned Taylor's name. And the other thing that's interesting about Taylor is he comes from a defense that surrounded him with a lot of talent. Remember, I'm going back a few years because Ndamukong Suh's now with the Dolphins, but he was with Ndamukong Suh. You know, he was with Ezekiel Ansah.
Nick Fairley.
Nick Fairley's another one who's been bounced around. So you had two defensive tackles, another powerhouse defensive end opposite you, and that's similar to now what he's walking in with the Giants, where Spags like to rotate personnel and also has, you know, significant edge rushers that he'll be backing up.
So I'm guessing, I don't see this in the story here. I can go back on Pro Football Focus and look. But I imagine, I know Ziggy Ansah's their right end, so he must have been their starter at left end last year, I would imagine, right?
Well, they also rotated guys in, but he was utilized on the left side. Yeah. So I think that he's going to fit in from that regard because of what Detroit asked their defensive personnel. And Duke Iheanacho, I mean, even if you go back before the Redskins, to me, he really jumped out to me when he was with the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had a very consistent defense. He was good at coming down in the box, stopping the run, also in coverage. So he has some versatility that I think they can toy with because everybody right now is trying to wonder, and, you know, you alluded to this when you wrote up the recaps for the two OTAs earlier this week, you know, who's going to secure the starting job opposite Landon Collins. And while Darian Thompson, I think, is going to have ample opportunity to reclaim the job, Duke Iheanacho is somebody that I think can play strong safety and free safety based on his experience in the NFL.
Yeah, and early on in practice, Andrew Adams, who obviously did a good job stepping in for Darian Thompson last year after his injury, he was in there a little bit, and Darian Thompson kind of went in and out as well. I'm sure they're still going to, you know, keep his snaps reduced because of the coming off the injury. But he was out there, you know, running around. He had his helmet on. He was doing all the team stuff that everyone else is doing, I think just in probably a little smaller volume. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good competition next to Landon Collins at safety. And I think it'll be interesting to see how they sort out this depth chart. Because I think you're right. The same way the offseason was about kind of making sure these positions are deep, I think now this part of the offseason is figuring out where these guys fit, you know, where they go in the depth chart, how you're going to use them, where they fit best, and, you know, you kind of put all those things together.
Well, and that's why, personally, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, but the free safety position is the position that I think is by far the most intriguing competition, more so than any other position on this roster entering training camp.
See, I would be surprised if Darian Thompson's not the starter. I'd be, if he's healthy, I'd be very surprised. He had won the starting spot last year in June.
Yeah.
He was so advanced as a rookie. So I would be surprised if Adams beat him out. And this isn't based on what anybody's told me. This is just my personal opinion. I'd be surprised if Adams beat him out, and I would be very surprised if a veteran came out here and knocked Darian Thompson out. I don't see it happening.
Well, I guess the way that I'm looking at it is, and I don't disagree with anything you just threw out, I'm not just looking at perhaps who wins the starting job. I'm also looking at how the depth chart plays out
all
and
right.
who they wind up keeping, because I'm looking at some of these safeties. You know, Nat Burhey's dealt with some injuries. You know, will he take a step forward? Will he prove his durability? You know, will Adams build off of his impressive campaign? What does Iheanacho bring to the table? So, you know, when you take that into consideration, Michael Thompson is another name we tend to forget about. He's recovering from injuries. I'm just curious, you know, how they envision utilizing this personnel and, you know, how many safeties they figure they're going to keep especially with maybe what they could get out of the cornerback position.
I like the linebacker spot, too. I think that's a really fun one to watch. You know, B.J. Goodson, can he win the first team spot? He's being given every opportunity to run with the ones, even in some nickel situations from what I've been able to kind of glean, looking at how they've set up some of these things. So I think he'll be given plenty of opportunities to go out there and win that spot. And can he hold off Keenan Robinson? Because I'm sure, look, Keenan Robinson was a three-down linebacker for Washington. He can do it. The question is he better than Goodson in running defense situations? That's what they're trying to find out.
Well, Keenan Robinson also, remember what we talked about at this time last offseason was his inability to stay healthy when he was with the Redskins, and he proved that last season where he was durable, and that's a big reason why I think Spags leaned on him and felt that the defense is in good hands, and when they're in passing downs, the opposition, we can keep him in, as opposed to perhaps what their thinking was even before they were putting the personnel on the field. So that played very well into the hands of the Giants, but Goodson, who made inroads on special teams last season, now has an opportunity, I think, get on the field much more. And yeah, I mean, the Giants, I think they're also in a position where they want to groom somebody at that middle linebacker position, not just for toying with one season, but somebody that can maybe be that reliable cornerstone for years to come too. Because, I mean, let's face it, John, since Antonio Pierce left, it's been hard, and I'm not throwing this out to be funny or anything. I mean, there hasn't really been a mainstay at the middle linebacker position for this team.
I mean, the biggest mainstay was probably Jonathan Goff, right? And he was only there for like a year and a half.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show you.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Boley kind of played that spot in nickel situations. Now, Casillas isn't technically the middle linebacker, but to me, he's kind of taken on that Antonio Pierce role as the leader because he's on the field for all three downs. So I think that's kind of the heir apparent right now, but you're right. They have it. And John Beeson, obviously,
yeah, Beeson, but also that's a short stint, too.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's just one of those things where they haven't been able to find a long-term solution.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get to some of your tweets. Let's open up the phone lines as we're previewing OTAs. You want to react to Peter King's rankings that we went over, as well as the competitions at certain positions that you're looking forward to seeing in the upcoming days at OTAs. Guess who gets us started? None other than Charlie in Portland, Maine. Boy, how fortunate we are on today's program.
You know, Charlie, I got to tell you, I'm getting a lot of heat from people on Twitter that we should not let you on anymore. And
wow,
that you're being very annoying and irritating. Your thoughts?
Who is that, Rhodey telling all his friends to tweet against me or something?
I don't know. But, maybe there is a popular movement beginning to form.
I don't blame him.
Anti-Charlie. You know, it might be Lance Metal that started that movement,
actually.
I'm not sure.
I don't reveal my sources, though.
Hey, at least I got a fan club out there, good or bad, right?
Hey, absolutely. Keeps you relevant.
The reason I'm calling is that I can't believe that we just waived Isaac Williams. He was like, you know, we put him on the roster towards the end of the year. He has very low money. And it seemed like he was promising. And we still got P.J. Thomas, rain keeps falling on my head, on our squad, and we're paying him like $3 million. I don't understand why they cut him, waived him, and did not, and we still got P.J. on our team. I don't understand that.
You mean J.T., by the way?
He's
been butchering just about everybody's name. It's Eshaq Williams. Can you give the guy some respect?
Oh,
you're killing me,
Eshaq,
Charlie.
Eshaq.
Boy,
Eshaq,
on Twitter, Eshaq, you know, and now this. You see, this is why I get on him. You understand? Charlie, this is what I love about you. You're passionate about specific players. I give you respect for that. But can you at least get their name right? That's all I'm asking. If you're going to get behind the player, I just want you to give him the rightful respect for the pronunciation of his name. That's all I'm asking for.
What difference does it make? He's gone now.
Well, whether guys are on the roster or not, that does not stop you from continuing to campaign for them, okay? I think that's been well documented.
Right. But I don't understand that reasoning. And we also had Hodges in, who is a young linebacker, a good linebacker, and we let him walk, and he went to Buffalo. I don't understand why we signed the safety from Washington. We've got a ton of safeties on our team right now.
Well, Charlie, I had a question. You wanted Hodges. Yeah, would you have been okay if they signed Hodges and cut Eshaq Williams? Would that have been okay with you?
No, I would have cut J.P. Thomas. That's who needs to
J.T. Thomas. It's J.T.
Yeah,
come on, Charlie.
Tussie.
Get out of the forest.
J.P. Thomas. Rain keeps falling on my head. That's why I call it, dude.
He
hasn't played for like 2 years, for God's sake, or whatever it was, and he didn't play well when he did. Why are we still hanging on to these people? I don't understand it. So that's what upsets me, is that we let Hodges off. I mean, I'm glad we signed Taylor from Detroit.
The Lions.
It's Taylor, isn't it?
No, you're right. No correction there. No, you smooth sailing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that tells me something, that they're not maybe as high on Moss of really coming in and taking that.
I don't know if I'd read so much into that.
Charlie, I think they want someone with a little bit of experience. Like I said, you look at that defensive end position, other than Kerry Wynn. And, you know, maybe Devin Tell is a better player than Kerry Wynn. I don't know. We'll find out. They don't have a lot of guys with a ton of experience on that backup defensive line. I think they want some guys that have been around the block a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I think the signing was great. I hope, you know, I think he'll be good to give us some, at least a third guy that maybe can actually rush the passer. So I'm good. I'm down with him. No problem at all. But I hope we can sign Cyrus. You know, Cyrus is still out there. You know, John, you know what I'd like to have you do is break down the offensive lines of our division and see where they stack up.
John, I will do that for you on one condition. If you can pronounce Cyrus's last name for me.
There's no hope. So we might as well move on to another segment, because there's no
No, honestly, even during the draft process 2 years ago, I continuously butchered that last name. It's not easy.
No, it is not easy. I have to look it up to confirm it, because I don't want to butcher it myself.
Quanjo or something like that, right?
You're right about the ballpark. Quanjo is actually the exact pronunciation, yes.
Oh, that's not bad, Quanjo. Yeah.
So just remember that.
But anyway, I hope, you know, we take a look at him and maybe bring him in or whatever. But, you know, I just don't get, you know, letting Williams go. I don't understand that. Low money, looked like he was.
Well, listen, it's possible, Charlie. I mean, keep this in mind, and I'm just speculating here. I'm not saying that I have any intel, but I mean, it's possible that guys get cut, you know, they pass through, and then they get welcomed back to the team depending on some other roster moves. So I wouldn't necessarily rule that out.
And, Charlie, you also don't know if there are any physical issues either. Yeah. You know, guys are hurt, you can get waived, injured. I have no idea if that was the case here. But, you know, those are some of the things that you have to keep in mind, too, that there are things that we might not even know about these guys, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Hey, what do you make of Victor Cruz coming out and kind of like speaking the truth, at least the way he sees it?
I read that. You saw what he said
yesterday?
Yeah,
I did see the comments. Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's so ridiculous. I mean, you really think Eli Manning, a guy who won a Super Bowl with Victor Cruz, and basically, Victor was one of the big reasons Eli had the best year of his career, is going out of his way on orders from somebody and is ignoring a wide-open receiver because of some, you know, team goal to discredit him with fans so it's easier to cut him. It is so far-fetched and ridiculous. He didn't even want to bring it up.
Well, I don't believe that part, but what I could believe is that McAdoo didn't give him any plays, you know, to go to Cruz first. So I could see that happening, you know, and, you know, that's a possibility, because he had a lot of incentives. If he caught so many passes, if he got so many touchdowns, his salary would have gone up. So I could see that possibly happening, and just not playing him in the slot position, which was his natural position, to me, knew that he wasn't going to have as much productivity as he would normally in a position
that he
is best suited for.
Here's the thing, Charlie. I don't disagree with you. I think it's well documented that Cruz is comfortable in the slot, but I think that with them drafting Sterling Shepard, you know, you could look at it that they also wanted to develop a young receiver who they ultimately felt was going to be the successor for Cruz. So it's hard to blame a team. Simultaneously, yes, you want Cruz to be productive, but at the same time, you also want to groom his successor. And the other thing that I'll point out is, you know, Cruz made a number of big plays last season. where Eli Manning needed a third down, and he went to him. So, I mean, it wasn't as if they were just ignoring him. You know, his targets were down. I agree with you. But, I mean, that was part of some of the other personnel that was on the field. But Cruz still came up with a lot of big plays, and Eli Manning trusted him. I don't think that that's stretching.
Yeah, and, Charlie, two other issues, too. And thanks for the call, man. I got a bunch of the guys online I want to get to. Appreciate it. Have a good Memorial Day weekend, Charlie. Appreciate it, as always. Cruz didn't even bring up the slot receiver thing, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, when he went over that.
Because to me, that's low-hanging fruit. That's an easy one for him to bring up. And, you know, that one actually does make a little bit of sense. But the other issue, and I saw that this got brought up in one of the articles I read, and I thought it was a really good point. Even on those big plays he made down the field, Lance, the reason they were such nice plays and nice catches and nice throws, he didn't have a ton of separation on those plays either. And look,
he was wide open.
I haven't gone back and looked at it to see how much he's open when he's not getting the ball. But my impression, just watching the games live, is that, you know, he wasn't running, like, wide open all over the field, and Eli Manning was ignored.
Well,
that was not my impression.
The one play, though, that, if memory serves me correct, and I have to go back to look at it, where I thought he was not necessarily open, and there was a lot of coverage, the Saints catch down the right sideline where he got the third down, they were able to run out the clock. That was a very tough throw by Manning, and Cruz really had a defender all over him. The other ones, off the top of my head, I'd have to go back and look. I remember there was one where it was off a slant, I believe, and he was wide open. Manning dumped it off to him, and then he ran for a lot of yardage after the catch.
Wasn't there one down the sideline against Washington where he was pretty tightly covered, too, through the left sideline, maybe?
May have been.
I'm trying to remember that.
Against Washington, yeah. I know. The one. You know which one I'm thinking about off the slant? Against the Bears. Was the one where I believe it was the slant. Manning dumped it off to him, and then he ran. The Saints one I referenced, that was in week two. I think he had a big one against Cleveland, the Browns, if I'm correct, in Cleveland. I don't remember whether or not there was a defender on him.
But see, those three or four games in a row where he had one catch for like 40 yards.
It was just one huge big one on third down or whatever it may be, and it helped the Giants get in scoring position.
He had a big one versus Philly. That's the one I was thinking about. Okay. A big one versus Chicago, a big one versus Cleveland. Those are the three kind of ones in the middle of the year.
201-939-4513. We've got...
That's Roll D, by the way.
Yes, I was going to say Roll D. I'm glad you corrected me, but that was in my mind. Roll D
I wasn't sure you were going to go there.
I was. Roll D, how's everything?
Roll D.
Roll D's a man of very few words, apparently.
Dave Dominic,
today.
Do you have Roll D up
there? Oh, wait, we got it.
Hello?
Yeah, Roll D, what's happening?
Hi, it's Leo from New Milford.
Leo, okay.
quote.
Our apologies. We'll be getting to Roll D momentarily then. But, Leo, how are we doing?
All right, good. I just wanted to talk about the linebackers because I think that's an area that, you know, is worth looking at. It's going to be interesting to see if Goodson can come up and become that little bit of a middle linebacker thumper that, you know, T-Dot's always talking about a thumper. On defense, we really don't have somebody in the linebacking core. I guess Kennard can be looking at it. You can look at him that way. But there's some interesting battles that will be coming on in the linebackers. And, you know, Charlie... Yeah, I love him because he gets the conversations churning.
But, yeah, you know, boy, does
he certainly ever. Suffers from premature analyzation.
It's an interesting term.
Starts looking about all these guys that are on the wire, and they're always better than anybody we have on the roster. But quite honestly, if J.T. Thomas can be healthy and move forward, he could fit himself into the lineup. Very easily. I mean, he's got the potential.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. No one loves them some undrafted free agents in June and July like Charlie in Portland made. Yeah. It's literally the highlight of his year. He enjoys, like, the Giants signing Devin Taylor more than he enjoys a win against the Eagles in October. It's really hilarious.
Yeah, I agree. But you start looking at the linebackers. Who do you think will be the starting linebackers? I mean, I got to guess it's going to be Kennard, Goodson, Casillas, and I guess Robinson's got to be in there.
Yeah, to me, Leo, it's going to be a four-guy rotation. I think on first and 10, week one against the Dallas Cowboys opening possession, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's Goodson in the middle, Casillas and Kennard outside. In the first third and 7 or third and 8 against Dallas, when you know Ezekiel Elliott's not going to get the football on a running play, it's going to be Casillas and it's going to be Keenan Robinson, in nickel.
Right.
And then also Kennard, I think, will be utilized on the line of scrimmage a little bit like he was late last season, and appreciate the phone call. So, you know, there's some competition. As far as JT Thomas is concerned, tore his ACL early in the season, so he missed pretty much the entire year last year.
September 16th, if I remember
right. It was in the opener against Dallas.
Yep.
He got hurt on a special teams play. And then he was out for the entire second half of that game.
That was the 9th, not the 16th. My apologies.
And never recovered. So he's looking to work his way back. And they brought him in when they signed him as somebody that could be that versatile type of linebacker, specifically on the outside. So he's going to have every opportunity to try to compete and reclaim his job. But he's got to prove that he can remain durable. I mean, that's a big thing with a lot of these guys coming off injury.
And he could be a core special teams player as well.
And that's key, though. Remember, you know, if you're going to be depth at any position, you have to be able to play special teams.
Your fifth and sixth, and if you do seven linebackers, have to be big-time special teams players.
Let's head back to the lines. Roldy is in Bayshore. Roldy, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance and John? What's going on?
Doing well, Roldy. How we doing?
I'm doing good. I still can't understand why he's still on the team, though, JT Thomas. I mean... I just what does the Giants see in this guy that they still have him on this team?
They think that when he gets healthy, he'll be a better linebacker than some of the other guys on the back end of the depth chart right now. I mean, I can't put it much more simply than that. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see to see if that happens.
And it's a 90-man roster.
I guess we don't have any. That's because we don't have any depth, I guess, at linebacker. That's the only thing. After this season, I don't even know. I mean, the only person that's going to be on there is what's his name? Goodson, right?
No, all those guys.
Still going to be under contract, right?
Kennard is heading into his fourth year, so I guess he would be a free agent. I think Casillas and Keenan Robinson are probably both up. Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm just surprised we didn't you know address that this off season. You know, being that we only have Goodson that's going to be only linebacker under contract.
Well, yeah, but even. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, even if you address the linebacker position, as you just mentioned, Roldy, there's no guarantee you're giving a guy a multi-year contract.
And just because Casillas and Robinson are up after the year and Kennard doesn't mean they're not going to be back.
Yeah, but I would rather have Kennard back than Casillas, man. I don't think Casillas will have another good season like he did last year. And I'm not banking on that.
We'll see. Here's the thing, though. Remember, Casillas is a guy that can play on third downs. Kennard can play a little defensive line on third down, but he ain't covering anybody.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. That's true. And another thing, to be honest with you, I got to say, Charlie has no idea what he's talking about. He's annoying on Twitter. He always wants to complain about stuff that he was complaining about Will Beatty because he wasn't playing. But if you guys remember a few years back, he used to complain about Will Beatty. The guy, as soon as the Giants are not giving, you know, wants to waive somebody, that's when he wants to, you know, praise, oh, why are we releasing this person? Why are we doing that? Eshaq Williams, do you even know who Eshaq Williams? You have no clue. You just read about him, and then you want to go on the radio or go on Twitter. Oh, I don't know why we released him. And Charlie, just go back to your living room, put your Tom Brady jersey on, or put your Bruins jersey on, or put your Celtics jersey on, because that's who you are really fan of, okay? Don't try to act like you're a Giant fan. You're a fraud. You're a fake. That's what you are. Bye.
Wow. Wow. Those are fight words.
Roldy dropped the mic with that one.
Oh, that was great. That was funny.
I love the passion.
That was funny.
Yeah. That seemed to be building up over quite some time.
And you know what? Say what you want about Charlie. He's not a fraud. He cares. He's passionate.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we ever questioned that.
Absolutely.
We just want him to pronounce a name or two right. That's all I'm asking for. I don't think that's asking for much. Let's head back to the phone line. Dennis is in New Jersey. Dennis, welcome to the program. What do you have for
us? What's up, Dennis?
Hey, how are you? What's going on?
Doing well, Dennis. So what do you got
for
us?
All right, I got two things. First of all, I constantly am reading about Eli Manning. He's washed up. He's only got 2 years left. He's only 36, right? 36?
I believe he is in that ballpark.
He is 36 years old, correct.
I mean, he's at the prime. I mean, he should be going at least till 2020 is my guess. And it's just everywhere I read, that's all they're talking about. And then Odell Beckham, I mean, this guy, I mean, with OTAs, I can guarantee you, everybody is at the Patriots OTAs. Odell Beckham has to get out of this all about himself, go to OTAs. I mean, the fact that he's hanging out with Manziel over Eli is absurd. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, remember, you know, as we've said all week long, OTAs are voluntary, and that holds true for any athlete on any team. I'll give you an example. The Eagles, Fletcher Cox, he's not at OTAs. Yeah. So, you know, Philadelphia, that market, they're dealing with the same things in terms of fans weighing in. Why isn't their star player working with the defense? And, I mean, the simple answer is it's voluntary. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, the optics don't play a role, but if it's voluntary, and that's what they negotiated when they brought in the new CBA, the players' union, when they sat down with the owners. From a law clause, if you want to word it that way, Dennis, it's hard to criticize a player for not showing up for an OTA if the whole point is that they negotiated them to be voluntary. They're protected, right. I guess what I'm saying, by the legalities of the CBA. Yeah. We could sit here and debate the morals and the optics all you want, but they're not wrong for not showing up if it's simply voluntary, and that's what they fought for as a union.
I just, you know, it just bothers me because I just think this team is so close. I mean, they can absolutely contend for Super Bowl this year, and I just think he'll, you know, he should be there throwing with Eli. I mean, they should be all in. I mean, this is it. I mean, next 2 years, I mean, you know, they got a really good shot, you know. But that's just my thoughts. But
thank you, Dennis.
I hear you, Dennis.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for the phone call.
And by the way, I know people have been critical of Eli from time to time. I haven't seen Eli's washed up anywhere yet. I think that's a little – have you seen that anywhere?
No, I haven't seen that. I mean, the only thing I see, and, you know, we've brought it up, everybody's trying to determine the window for Eli Manning and speculating. Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 4 years? I mean, you have Tom Brady coming out saying that, you know, he would love to play till he's 45.
Right.
So who knows at this point? As long as Eli stays durable and he's healthy – which he has, you know, he's going to play as long as he feels he can still perform at a decent level. And, I mean, while, you know, there certainly have been some ups and downs during the course of the regular season, as long as he's healthy, I don't see why we got to sit here and wonder, is it 2 to 3 more years?
Before we get to Tony Elliott, by the way, Wayne Gallman's Clemson's running backs coach, we'll get to him in a second. One thing, this will be the first OTA you get to watch today. What's the first thing your eyes are going to go to when you go out there on the practice field today?
Well, I want to see Darian Thompson up close and personal, how he's on the field. I mean, that's been some of the things that I've been talking about leading up to OTAs, as well as the JT Thomases of the world, some of those injured players. And I'm also going to be interested to see how the offensive linemen are aligned. I can't tell much because there's no pads and no contact, but I want to just see how the personnel is utilized. I think that's probably number two, where players fit in and how the coach is experimenting with them.
And by the way, before we get to Wayne Gallman's running back coach, Tony Elliott, just want to wish everybody happy Memorial Day weekend. Of course, thank you to all you folks out there that, you know, fought and unfortunately died in the service of the country to keep us safe, and thank you to the veterans out there as well for continuing to do that today.
Absolutely. We echo your sentiments of what John just laid out. No show tomorrow because of Memorial Day weekend.
Or Monday.
So we were back up and running on Tuesday starting at noon Eastern, regularly scheduled time. We'll continue to take your phone calls as well as get to your tweets. So certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Tony Elliott, the Clemson running backs coach at Clemson, who coached Wayne Gallman. You're going to hear from him now, get some insight on what Wayne Gallman will bring to the table. In the fourth round of this year's draft, the Giants selected Wayne Gallman out of Clemson, the running back, and we're now joined by a man who knows the ins and outs of his game very well, and that is the co-offensive coordinator running backs coach at Clemson, Tony Elliott. Tony, Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's going well, and I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to join you.
Well, Coach, let's start with your impressions of Wayne Gallman. What was your reaction when you found out that he was going to the New York Giants, and what do you think he's going to bring to this team?
You know, I was excited for him. You know, when you think about his skill set and what he brings to the table, and what I know about the New York Giants, and when I was a kid, they like to run the football and need a big back in the eye that can come downhill and pose his will in the fourth quarter, and that's what Wayne Gallman is. He's not your typical 225-pound kid, but he plays like he's got the heart of a guy, 7 foot tall, 300 pounds, and he's just going to give you everything that he has.
You know, Coach, it's funny you mention that because I know some Giant fans that call into the show often, they want the Giants to really kind of get a bruising, powerful, physical running back to complement Paul Perkins. Do you think Wayne Gallman can fill that type of role if you want him to?
Oh, definitely. He's a very, very physical guy, and I think that's what separates him from a lot of the backs who are in his draft class and a lot of the backs that are in the game today. He's got an old-school mentality. I believe the man doesn't have any nerves, doesn't feel any pain,
You can hand it to him. You can hand it to him 30 times a game, and he's going to have the same demeanor. And he plays with a defensive mentality, and that's what we noticed early on in the recruiting process when he was in high school. That he played running back very pissed off while having a smile on his face.
Well, I'm sure the Giants are not going to complain about that, a guy that runs angry and runs with toughness. And, Coach, you just alluded to his versatility. And the other thing that jumps out to me when you look over his stats, he was utilized as a receiver within the Clemson offense. You know, what is it about his receiving skills that you think he could bring to the Giants that could really make him a well-versed and a well-dangerous running back?
You know, I think that he's got a lot of upside as a receiver. You know, year after year, he got better and better and better, and we started to involve him more. And I think as you get into the pro style of play, where the running backs typically are in your top three in receiving, he's going to be a guy that can extend plays. And so that allows him to be on the field in all situations. And so he's the kind of guy that can be a bruising back. He's a good pass protector, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. And with what you guys do at that level by incorporating the back a lot more than what we do, I think that's going to be the part of his game that really takes off over the next couple of years.
Yeah, Coach, the one thing that most scouts said about him heading into the draft is that he was a jack of all trades. He can do a little bit of everything, which I know people in the NFL really love. One minor criticism we heard about his game coming into the pros is that maybe he ran a little bit too high. Was that something that you guys worked with him on when you had him there in Clemson for a few years?
Oh, no question. I got to realize he's a legitimate 6 foot guy.
Oh yeah, he's a big guy.
So he's a tall guy. And also too, what I think that is the most exciting thing about him for you guys is his best football and his growth is still ahead of him at the running back position. You know, he played in a wing team style of offense in high school. And so really transitioning to college is where he first learned how to run the zone. And you guys run some of the outside zone and some of the pin and pull plays that we don't quite run at this level. So I think, you know, with his style, he'll be able to adapt. And he runs high, but he knows how to lower his pads. And that's one thing that I was always on him about. I put him under the chutes and tried to get him to bend. But when it's game time, when he knows he needs to lower those pads, he's going to run low.
And you also had mentioned that the pass protection was something that he's been working on at Clemson, and I know that any NFL running backs coach will tell you, in order to get on the field as a rookie, they need to have confidence that on a third down passing situation, you can pick up the blitz or pick up the pressure. You know, how have you seen his development, though, from the time he came into Clemson to the time he left with respect to his pass protection?
You know, the biggest thing was technique, and I talk the same language that you guys talk. I mean, you guys pay the quarterback a ton of money in the National Football League. We had Deshaun Watson leading our offense, and so guys knew that in order to play for me, they had to be able to protect the quarterback. And coming into college, obviously there's a big learning curve in terms of defensive identification. And so, you know, by about a year and a half in, he had that down pat. The biggest thing is just being committed to his technique because, again, he's a very physical guy. He doesn't like mind contact. He'll put his face in the fan. The biggest thing is just being disciplined after you carry the ball, you know, 15 or 20 times to still use your technique because at the running back position and pass protection, first you got to know who you're blocking. And then, two, you're sitting there and you got to know just the nuances of attacking the line of scrimmage, proper leverage, when to shoot your hands, what technique are you using? Is it a drive block kind of technique where you got to stop that guy or you got a little bit more finesse? So, you know, I think as he, you know, gains experience with what you guys do, you'll see the best of him to come.
We're joined by Tony Elliott. He was Wayne Gallman's position coach at Clemson. Coach, one thing I always like to see with certain players, you know, Gallman wasn't a five-star recruit coming out of high school. He comes to Clemson. He sits out a year, he redshirts, and then in an open competition, his first time really on the field being a part of the team, he wins the starting job in his redshirt freshman year. What does that say about the young man that he was able to do that at a program where the skill level is so high and you guys are competing for national championships?
Well, first, it's about the evaluation process, very similar to you guys' league. The scouts go out, and they're not looking for the guys that everyone is talking about. They're looking for the guys that jump out on film. And so that's what attracted us in high school is just his physicality. And he's got an unbelievable work ethic. I don't think the young man gets tired. The people in the weight room, myself, I mean, you can't make him get tired. He's like an Energizer bunny. He goes all day long. And so coming in, he just had that hunger because he had that chip on his shoulder that he might not have had the recognition of some of the other guys. And he's a stubborn young man in that he knows what he wants, and he's not going to let anybody tell him that he can't do it, that he's not good enough. and he'll go out and prove it by outworking everybody, which is unique. Where some young men they're scared to put in the work, but he's a young man that'll work all day, loves to work, and I think the running back coach up there is really gonna like Wayne Gallman because he's got a unique sense of humor. He's an unbelievable young man. He's a college graduate. His priorities are in the right order, and all he wants to do is play football.
Well, I'm glad you alluded to his sense of humor, Coach. I'm sure you get a kick out of this. The first time he met with the media, they asked him what his first impressions were of the Giants facility. He said, the meatloaf in the kitchen. So I think that we already got a taste of his sense of humor with respect to that. And he said, you know what, at Clemson, there wasn't that type of meatloaf. So he's already distinguishing himself with respect to the kitchen. And, you know, talking about that camaraderie, I don't want to get too off topic, but, you know, you've been at Clemson for some time, and the Giants actually have two other members in the recent Clemson classes. They have B.J. Goodson, the linebacker, and then Jadar Johnson is an undrafted free agent who they brought in. How much do you think that's going to help a player like Wayne Gallman that he's coming into a team where he already has a few of his previous teammates already on the squad?
You know, I think the biggest thing is just gives him a level of comfort. And then also, too, he knows the standard in which we prepare with down here. And so he'll see his teammates, and they're able to remind each other that iron sharpens iron. So they'll bring out the best in their teammates in the locker room. And I think the biggest thing is just going to help him with the transition since we're tight. You heard me laughing about his unique sense of humor. I mean, he's just an easygoing guy off the field, doesn't need much to get him going. He's not motivated by money. He's not motivated by celebrity. He just loves to play football. And so that doesn't surprise me that the first thing that he noticed was the meatloaf. And being in a big city in a big market like New York, it's going to be good to have Jadar and more so BJ, being an older guy that's been there for a little while, just to kind of give him the ins and outs of what to do off the field away from the complex. Because when he's in the complex, he's going to be in football mode.
Yeah, you know, Coach, we've talked a lot about his physical abilities. Was it as on the field? You're with him in the meeting room teaching him the game of football. And obviously, I don't have to tell you, as big as the physical jump is, the mental jump from college to the pros, the size of the playbook, the terminology and all that stuff can really give these guys a lot of issues. What type of learner was Wayne, and do you think he's going to be able to adjust quickly to the rigors of learning a pro-style offense like the Giants have here under Ben McAdoo?
You know, I think he'll be able to do it. He's a quick learner because, again, you alluded to it earlier in the conversation that he won a starting job as a redshirt freshman. And now when you're redshirt, you're typically not with the offense because you're working with the scout team. And so to be able to come in fall camp with your first real experience and be able to take over that job, you know, is a testament to how quickly he learns. And he's played a ton of football. So he's at a point now where the game doesn't quite move as fast for him. And a lot of it is confidence, and he doesn't lack any confidence. He knows he's got the ability. And the thing that I liked about him is, you know, by the time, you know, he was a senior for me, it wasn't me getting on the board, drawing, explaining. It's like, Wayne, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. I got it, Coach. I'm good to go.
Nice.
That certainly is extremely beneficial. As we're talking with Tony Elliott, the co-offensive coordinator, running backs coach at Clemson. He coached Wayne Gallman, the Giants' fourth-round draft pick this year. One of the things that most rookies have to do in order to get some playing time early in their careers, Coach, is he may have to be playing on special teams in addition to his running back role. I'm curious, number one, how much special teams work did he do at Clemson, and how do you think his skill set perhaps could translate to a special teams role?
Now, first for us, it was a little bit, you know, of a different situation in that, especially in his junior year, he was the workhorse, and we didn't want to use him or risk him getting hurt on special teams, so he didn't play much. Going into the season this year, we made an effort, you know, to get him on a couple of things, let him be a hold up guy on punt return. There's no doubt he can run down on kickoff team and light somebody up because, again, he's played linebacker. He's got that mentality. So he's got the skill set. So for us, it was more a situation. He was so valuable to us, you know, as an offensive player, and we have more depth than you would on a 53-man roster, and we had some younger guys that we could play on special teams to get them on the bus, and that's why he didn't do it here for us. But, you know, he's long, he's fast, he's physical, he's intelligent, so he's got a great skill set. It'll just be that learning curve to be able to pick it up quick enough, you know, to be able to get on the field to help you guys.
Coach, final question from me. One guy you had to game plan against this year is Giants second-round pick Dalvin Tomlinson out of Alabama, someone Wayne Gallman tried to run around in that national championship game. What do you remember seeing from that big fellow on tape? And I'll tell you what, I watched that first half against you guys in the championship on tape. That guy was all over the field on you.
if I could say one word, monster. he's a monster. I mean, he's just big, physical, strong guy, and you see a lot at our level. You see a lot of big guys But he just held the point so well. I remember, you know, just watching those guys on tape and just how precise they were with their hands, how it seemed like they were just perfect in every hand fitment that they had up front. Double team couldn't move them. They knew how to get off blocks and make plays, and that's what was so special about that D-line at Alabama is, you know, not only could they hold the point, but they could disengage, and then they had the speed to go make the plays. And I believe he's a highly intelligent man. I've read a lot about him, and I think he graduated with honors.
Yeah, he did.
And so, yep, so he was just very, very impressive. I remember seeing him. You couldn't move them. That's just what I remember about those guys. And so when you said run around them, you know, it wasn't because you wanted to. It was like, hey, Wade, you know, we might want to try and run around these guys and get it to the edge and give ourselves a chance.
Well, that's certainly what the Giants want to hear, a guy that can't move, especially when he's playing next to a big mammoth like Damon Snacks Harrison. Though, Coach, you'd be happy to know that when Wayne said he met Dalvin again here at the Giants facility, he at least has the bragging rights after the result of the latest championship game. So I'm sure you guys have nothing to complain with respect to that.
Oh, it's nothing but respect for those guys. I mean, I think those are probably two of the best college football games in a long time.
Yeah. Oh,
and
I'm
just blessed to be a part of it and to be on the field with those guys. That was a vision that Coach Sweeney had when he took over the program to build a program that could compete with anybody in the country. And obviously Alabama has been at the top of the mountain for several years, and we're just very fortunate and blessed to have our flag at the top of the mountain right now.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to watching Wayne Goleman grow and produce here with the New York Giants. Coach, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
Clemson co-offensive coordinator, running backs coach Tony Elliott joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Some interesting little tidbits on what Wayne Goleman will bring to the table, and seemed to be very high on his classroom work as much as his ability to run with the football.
And Lance, that's the trick. Look, everything speeds up at the pro level. We know that. But what allows these players to keep up with the physical speed is being able to process everything up here. Because the minute you start thinking up here when you're going a million miles an hour on the football field, that's when you run into trouble. So you can't match the physical speed until you're up to speed mentally, and it sounds like Wayne Goleman should be able to handle that fairly well.
And you're going to need that mental approach if he has to contribute on special teams, because when Tom Quinn addressed the media not too long ago, he said Goleman could play a role like Paul Perkins, who started off as a coverage guy, and it sounded like Elliott, the head coach at Clemson, sort of indicated that on coverage he could be useful in that regard as well.
Yeah, and frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him as a kickoff return guy too at some point. He's got the speed and the size to do it, so I think that's something they might want to mix him in as much. And Lance, it's funny, this was an odd draft class for the Giants. I wrote about this last week. Really only two guys in their six-person draft class is going to really be able to contribute mightily on coverage teams. You know, Tomlinson could be a field goal block or field goal protect
like
guy,
Hankins.
Maybe, like Hankins was. Davis Wood obviously is not doing any special teams work. He's not going to be a gunner out there.
Yes.
And neither is Adam Bisnawati, maybe, you know, field goal protect, something like that. So you're down to the only two guys that are really going to contribute on special teams are Evan Engram and Wayne Goleman as coverage guys. So I think that's interesting, and I think both those guys will have to contribute on special teams over the course of the season if they want to earn their way onto the field.
All right, well, we are in the midst of OTAs. We'll have continuous coverage here on Giants.com, but since it is Memorial Day weekend,
we out!
Yes, no show on Friday, no show the following Monday. We will be back up and running on Tuesday, which is May 30th, with a latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live.
By the way, will you be coming out to Seattle for the weekend or no?
No, unfortunately, I'm stuck here in New York City working with other
Lance,
obligations.
Once
you
again,
will be enjoying the Pacific Northwest,
yes,
though,
one of our college
is nice.
Friends is getting
yes.
married. I, of course, am attending, and Lance
yes,
always
well,
finds a reason not to go see his friends from college.
Yes, well, you will Hello. Give us the full report next week. I'm
yes.
sure Giants fans
oh,
can't
they're
wait.
Psyched.
Oh, they are
absolutely
so psyched to hear the breakdown of the wedding of a common friend. All right, for John
Well,
Trump.
They would love to have me give commentary on your dancing skills at the reception.
Well, that's true. Well, listen, I did some dancing at your wedding, so you could go back and watch the videotape, and we can have an entire program dedicated to that. Enjoy Memorial
not
Day
pretty,
weekend.
By the way.
Yes, we will speak to you next Tuesday. For John Schmoke, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.
Enjoy your holiday, everybody.